for example, if they made $10,000 selling your course, all they did was put a different label on it, and you were able to prove that is your content and your copyright, then they would have to account for the profits they've made for selling that course. And that means, say they spent $2,000 on Facebook ads and they made $10,000 profit, and take out the $2,000, what's left, the balance after the expenses, is all yours.
Welcome to Imperfect Action. I'm Steph Taylor. For years, I read all the books, downloaded all the freebies, and did all the courses. But it wasn't until I started taking Imperfect Action that my business had its first $1 million year. Imperfect Action is about doing things before you're ready, prioritizing consistent action over perfect action, and moving forward, even when you're not sure you're doing it right. On this show, you can expect mindset advice, actionable marketing tips, and strategies to build a business that brings you more profit, more freedom, and even more joy. Are you on the list to get my daily biz boosters? Every day, I'll send you a bite-sized prompt designed to help you grow your business in a more intentional way. Sign up at stephtaylor.co/DBB or at the link in the show notes. Hey, welcome back to Imperfect Action. This is episode 650. Today, I'm bringing in my good friend Riz Amin from Found Legal. So that's Found with two D's, to talk all about a topic that isn't relevant until it's really relevant, right? We don't love to talk about legals and copywriting and trademarks. They're not as sexy as Instagram or TikTok until somebody copies you, and then you actually need to take action and you need to protect your brand against that. So today, Riz and I are talking about how you can proactively prevent a copycat, how you can react if somebody does copy your brand or parts of your business. We're talking about how you can accidentally avoid copying someone. And we're also talking about a really exciting topic, which is the copyright around content created by ChatGPT and other AI, because that's a very new, very developing, very complex topic. And I think it's worthwhile looking at this if you are somebody who is considering using ChatGPT in any part of your content creation process. Now, I do want to disclaim that this is from an Australian legal perspective. Riz is a lawyer here in Australia. It might vary from country to country. It will vary from country to country. And also that the content in this episode is not specific legal advice for your situation. It is for general purposes only. And if you do need specific legal advice, always go and see a lawyer for your situation, right? As you'll discover in this episode, a lot of the time, investing in working with a lawyer ahead of time can save you a lot of money down the track. So I wholeheartedly think that if you need advice for your specific situation, go and talk to an expert rather than talking to Google. So without further ado, let's jump into today's episode with Riz. Riz, welcome to Imperfect Action. I'm happy to have you here to talk about something that's not a very sexy or exciting topic, but that is very, very relevant to pretty much anybody who runs a business. Actually, it's relevant to everybody who runs a business online. So thank you so much for giving us your time to talk about this today.
My pleasure. And thank you so much for having me. I've been listening to your podcast for quite a few years now, and I love what you do. And it's an absolute honor to be here today.
And I mean, we've had a lot of chats over Prosecco and lunch a few times. And I've learned so much just from talking to you about a lot of these things. So I want to kick off by talking about this concept of copying, because it's very easy for somebody to say, oh, this person copied my idea or they copied my Instagram post. But I'm curious to know, like, from a legal standpoint, what is actually copying and what is actually not copying?
Now that's a good question, because, you know, there's a myth out there that if you copy 10% of something, it's okay. And it's not really. It's more a question of, you know, how substantive that is, how important that element that you've copied is to that content. So it's not a case of just simply saying, hey, I probably don't need 10%, so I'm okay. Copyright infringement is something that you have substantially copied, but it's not the volume, if you know what I mean. It's the quality of that copying as well. So unless, if it's a key part, what you've copied, then it's copyright infringement, you know? And in terms of online businesses and social media, when you copy somebody's caption word for word and then you put it onto your profile on your Instagram and don't credit them or don't seek their permission and it's their original content, you're infringing. Whether that's words, whether that's an image that belongs to them, that's copying. And you can seek permission. You can license. You can do many of those things, but you can't just expect to be able to use what you found on the internet willy-nilly. You know, you've got to do your research. You've got to make sure it's not somebody else's original content.
So where, like, if we bring it back a step to, you know, like you've had an idea for an online course, for example, and then somebody, and you've created that course, you've launched it, and then somebody else out there goes and creates a course with exactly the same idea, but the content inside the course isn't your content. Is that copying in a legal sense?
That's not, I wouldn't say that was copying as such, because the reason being, you know, there's so many courses out there now for, if say you're a digital marketer, there's many, many digital marketing courses. There's many, social media type courses and how to launch a membership course or how to launch a course, you know. There's lots of courses out there and they are similar, yet they will be different because of the creator and the input by the creator. So the idea is not necessarily unique anymore. It's how you interpret that idea, how you present that idea, and what you put into that idea when you launch it. I make it real, make it something substantive. So you can't stop. You know, it's like Pepsi and Cola. I don't know if that's the best example, actually. Let me get back to that one. But it's, you don't own an idea, you know? Necessarily, it depends on, if somebody's copied your course in detail, then that's something else. But if it's, I'm launching a course on how to create a legal, firm. Let's just say I do that. Somebody else can do the same thing as long as they haven't copied my content, haven't come in, purchased my course and then copied it and presented it as their own. If they launch a course, they'll have their own spin on it. They'll have their own processes around it. So copying the idea is not copyright infringement, but copying the content is.
What about when it comes to Instagram? Like we've seen, I've heard so many people, I've been on Facebook groups where people have said, I've got a copycat. Somebody's opened an Instagram account and they're sharing content that's so similar to mine, but it's not like they've copied the caption word for word. They haven't copied the graphic exactly, but the content's very similar. Where do you draw the line there?
That's when it gets harder, to be honest. It gets harder because if they haven't copied it and it's, kind of like almost like general information that's potentially available, but you've put your own spin on it. That's where it gets tricky to establish. Well, is it content a copy of mine, and is the elements that they used taken from me, and that's unique to me? It's harder to prove in that case, to be honest. And I've had scenarios like that where people have come to me, and we've had to have a look, and it's kind of difficult to establish then that it's your original content when they've made it sufficiently unique, shall we say, made it their own. And it's a content that you see everywhere as well, but just with everyone else's own spin on it. And it's similar to that idea point as well. You know, other people will have ideas for courses that are about the same topic, but with their own spin, with their own interpretation. It's harder to prove if it's if there's not enough uniqueness taken away, shall we say, from the original content. it's harder to prove as well when it's sufficiently different.
So I guess in that case, you just have to say, look, imitation's the sincerest form of flattery, yeah. And you kind of have to leave it.
Yes. And also, to be honest, Steph, you know, when you think about it, it's the online world. You know, the world has become a smaller place and there's so much content out there and so many people doing similar things. It's inevitable there will be some similarity, shall we say, around the content that's being generated, especially if you operate in a similar field to each other as well, and what you post out around different content. But what you can do to make you unique is your branding, your voice. You make it unique. You know, if you do that and you have a, you know, you look at other ways of, you know, making yourself stand out, whether it's through trademarking and registering your business name or a logo or tagline that helps you stand out, your brand voice, your branding, all of those things make you synonymous with, that brand, shall we say, in that content. Like there's so many copywriters out there, you know, and some amazing content you see from all of them. And there's like WordSenti, who we know, who's doing some amazing things. At the moment, she does incredible things, but she's not the only copywriter. There's other copywriters, but she's made her voice, her brand so unique with her branding, with her voice, with her business name.
And that's copywriters with a W, not copywriters as in like copyright. Just to avoid the confusion, because we are about a very similar topic.
Correct. Sorry, apologies. Probably maybe not the best example then. But I guess what I'm trying to say there is Anita and WordSenti are very unique. So what she does and how she presents is unique to her. And there's other copywriters out there, not copyright in the, you know, intellectual properties then, who are doing similar things, you know, but completely different voice, different branding, different name. So there's an ability to, you know, be in the same niche, be in the same industry, but still be unique.
Absolutely. Now, that segues really nicely into my next question, which is kind of a huge question, but we'll unpack it, I guess, bit by bit. How can somebody prevent a copycat? Like if you're a business owner and you're starting out or you've been in there for a little while, what kind of steps can you take in your business to prevent a copycat from a legal standpoint?
Okay. So there are quite a few things you can do. And a number of practical things. You could make sure you have terms and conditions on your website, on any content you create, have copyright notices as well. And keep a track of anything you create. So you've got a internal digital footprint with time frame, dates, if you like, as well, should the inevitable happen and you get accused. And you would have also, you know, copyright notices in your content. You can use technology to assist you as well in terms of protecting your content. But what I always tell clients is best to be as proactive as possible with your content and how you protect it through your terms and conditions on your website. If you have contracts, you're a service provider and you provide one-on-one services, make sure you've got language in those agreements around who owns the IP that you create and how does that work. If people are visiting your website, you've got a copyright notice on there. You've got terms and conditions on there explaining exactly, you know, what the rules of engagement are for visiting your website or accessing your course, or any other content consumed either on your website or through a membership or a course. You should have all those things in there and be proactive in that sense. And if you do also offer digital content like ebooks, etc., copyright notices in there as well should be included as an extra, protection, just sort of, I guess, put them on notice. This is your copyright. More than anything, there's no legal requirement to have a copyright notice as such, but it's important from being proactive and protecting your content. And I believe there, I can't think of any names off the top of my head, but I believe there there is technology out there that can also help you protect the content as well.
So let's take a step back, and because you'd mentioned copyright notices. So I think a lot of people get stuck on what is the difference between copyright and a trademark, and do I need to actively be copywriting everything that I create?
No. So with copyright, let's just step back. With copyright, what happens is the moment your idea is put to paper or put to, you know, on your Google Drive or wherever you create your content, the moment it's expressed, it lives and breathes, and you have copyright under Australian law. So things like, you know, a script for a movie or a TV show, the movie itself, the TV show itself, any video content you've created for a course, any, other content you've created for a course, paintings, drawings, graphic design, all of those things are protected by copyright the moment they express. You know, they're not just an idea in your head. And it includes other things like, you know, other written work like text, poetry, manuscripts, etc. And sound recordings, and even actually performance works like dance choreography. All of these things are protected by copyright, and it generally lasts your entire lifetime plus 70 years. Okay. But like I said before about ideas, dreams, conversations with your dog, you know, common knowledge and facts, names, titles, those things are not protected by copyright. And that's not an exhaustive, by the way, but, you know, they are not protected by copyright. But what you can do instead is, you can trademark your business name. You can trademark your logo, or slogan or phrase. You can, in fact, trademark colors, shapes, sounds, and even scent, as well. For example, Play-Doh, was able to successfully register their product's unique scent as a trademark. You know, I think Cadbury's, their silk, the purple, that's been trademarked. Yeah. Tiffany's, they've trademarked their color as well. So you can, under the umbrella of intellectual property, there sits copyright and trademarks and patents and trade secrets and things like that. So there are other protections and mechanisms in place to protect what you create. So if you were to create a course, your content is protected by copyright, and you can protect your course name or tagline or logo that you may use via a trademark. And that's the extra layer of protection you can get. So with, like I said, with copyright, you don't have to do anything as such other than create it for it to exist and be protected under the law.
So, I mean, trademarking is not the cheapest exercise, especially if you're engaging a lawyer to do it on your behalf. So where do you draw the line on what things to trademark versus what not to trademark?
So when I speak to our clients when they want to trademark something, my question to them is, what is your business strategy for, you know, the business and this name? You know, what are your plans? What do you want to do with this? Where do you see it in a few years' time? And how, you know, what are the things that you want to protect that are going to sit under that? And that, you know, gets them thinking, well, these are the things I want to do, and this is why I want to, you know, trademark this particular name or this particular logo. And it's, and although it may seem or sound expensive to do it, register that trademark, it's a lot more expensive to fight an infringement when you haven't registered a trademark. So you've got to weigh up the pros and cons. Be proactive with protecting that trademark. And registering that trademark is a lot less expensive than fighting an infringement argument, or if somebody's infringed on your trademark and trying to, you know, protect that brand name that you have when it's not registered, is a lot harder and a lot more expensive. So, and the other thing people don't think about necessarily at the beginning, because why should they? But when you're setting up your business and you're distracted by all the shiny toys, you know, your branding, your website, you know, and your graphics and all the pretty stuff, you don't think about the longevity of that business necessarily, or where it might take you. And when you protect your copyright and you protect your trademarks, and that under that umbrella of intellectual property, it's a business asset. So that if one day you wanted to scale it in some way through licensing or, a franchise, for example, you having a registered trademark is super important. And if you were to want to then sell the business, you're selling a valuable asset, as well. So it's important both from a potential infringement perspective, because the cost involved in fighting an infringement for an unregistered trademark can escalate and become quite expensive. And also from a perspective of it being a valuable asset that you can monetize, it's really worthwhile considering registering a trademark. And look, it's not impossible to DIY it. It takes a fair bit of time because you're not going to know what you don't know. But it's well worthwhile if you are keen to grow that business and make it something. It's worth protecting at the beginning, not waiting for it to be a success.
I DIY'd all of my trademarks. I spent way too much time researching. In hindsight, I should have just got a lawyer to do it for me at the start.
Yeah, but honestly, it's such a valuable asset. When you have that, and like I always use this example, but it's because it's such a good one. But Disney and the market for making movies, right? They're famous for making movies. They're not famous for making dolls. They license, you know, their brand, their name, and make so much money. It's a valuable income stream for them. And they license their brand, and they've got all sorts of amazing, you know, terms and conditions for anyone who's successful enough to be accepted into, you know, into their world to license their brand name.
And I mean, that actually leads me down another rabbit hole, which I'm not going to talk about yet, but around, this is something that's been a huge thing in the NFT space, right? Is around licensing of who owns those assets, because there was one particular case where people had paid a lot of money to own a particular NFT because they were told that if they owned that NFT, they would own complete copyright over it. And then that got revoked. That license got changed so that it was a Creative Commons license then. So anybody who in the world actually could use those graphics, not the person who owned it. And that was really interesting, but that's a bit of a rabbit hole. Now, I think the most powerful thing for people listening to this episode now is going to be, what do you do if somebody has copied you? Like, somebody's copied you, now what?
So a couple of things. First of all, don't go crazy and, you know, name and shame. Calm head is the best. What you should do is, first of all, you know, screenshot, get any evidence before it disappears as well. And then reach out to them via DM, via email, if there's a way to reach out to them first and let them know, because they may not realize they're infringing on your copyright and they may, upon being notified, stop what they're doing, remove that content that's infringing on your copyright, you know, so it's worthwhile taking that step first. And you obviously, you know, you can provide the evidence that you've collected, show why you own that copyright and do all those things. And hopefully they remove that content. If that doesn't work, then you can do a couple of other things as well. One is you can, if it's on Instagram, for example, or Facebook, they have a form that you can complete. It's essentially a takedown notice. So you let them know, provide the evidence, and they can then assist you. And platforms like Shopify also have a similar process where you let them know, show them the evidence, explain, you know, what the grounds are, etc. So there's other steps you can take, not just directly with the person who's infringing. You can go to the platforms they're hosted on as well. So that's one other step you can take. The other is to write to them more formally, which is called a cease and desist letter. You can do that yourself, but you can also engage a lawyer to do that, because typically it carries more weight when it's from a lawyer. And in there, you need to like back yourself. You need to set out all the evidence. You need to set out what, you know, what's been copied and your ownership and on the basis that you own that copyright. And when you want them to take it down and stop using it, you know, give them a time frame to remove it all and to confirm all of those things. So we've got a blog article somewhere on my on our website that kind of talks you through those steps. So you can set, you know, what you want to happen and how soon you want it to happen all in that cease and desist. Or you can have a lawyer assist you to do all of that so they receive a more formal notification. And if you ever do it yourself, make sure you send it not just via email, but also registered post as well, if you can access and address it at all possible. So that's your other step that you can take. And if that still doesn't work, then you need to, because your cease and desist letter also needs to let them know what you're going to do if they don't do it in the time frame you've asked them to act. And that may be taking them to court. That may be escalating it further. That may be engaging a lawyer to take it further. So, and then that's when it starts to become potentially costly. Nine times out of 10, so far in our experience, we've been able to resolve matters with just a cease and desist letter. We haven't had to take it further, and that has worked. The other thing you can do, and I just want to use a course as an example, is where your course has been copied and you have all the evidence to show all of that, then you could potentially also get what we call an accounting of profits. And you probably would, I would recommend a lawyer at that point as well, because what you can do is you can get profits they've made off the back of your hard work brought back from them. So, for example, if they made $10,000 selling your course, all they did was put a different label on it, and you were able to prove that is your content and your copyright, then they would have to account for the profits they've made for selling that course. And that means, say they spent $2,000 on Facebook ads and they made $10,000 profit, and you take out the $2,000, what's left, the balance after the expenses, is all yours. And you can claim that as an accounting of profits. So sometimes people don't realize they can do that as well if they've been infringed. So that's something you can do as well, and potentially argue for your legal costs to be paid as well.
And, you know, accounting of profits, it sounds like such a crazy idea, but a mutual friend of ours who is a lawyer, I'm not going to say who it is because I don't know if she's publicly talked about this, but she had this problem where somebody copied her exact ebook, sold it to their audience, and she, because she had the right terms and conditions in place, because she was smart, she was a lawyer, she knew what she was entitled to, and she actually managed to recoup what they had earned from selling her ebook. So it's not that of an, not that outlandish. Like, it does happen.
No, absolutely. And you can not just claim those account for profits, you can potentially also claim the legal costs as well. So it's something worth pursuing, especially when another person has made income from your work. So it's something to bear in mind, and you should, but I always feel like, you know, copying will happen. It's inevitable. But if you can be as proactive as possible in protecting what you have through a combination of things, so through a combination of having the right legal terms, the right notices on your website, on your content, and having a registered trademark, all of those things lend itself nicely to protecting you, so that if in the horrible situation where you have had a copyright infringement, you can you know, use all of that to bear in your argument for them ceasing and stop using your work. And like in our mutual friend's case, be able to also get an accounting of profits as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And you've also got a copycat kit, which is like a DIY kit that somebody can take to, you know, go and do the cease and desist and all of that thing. So we'll make sure to link to that in the show notes for anybody who has been in the unfortunate case of having their things copied, because unfortunately, yeah, like you said, it does happen. Now, something that I don't know if this happens to you a lot because you don't have like a personal brand account on Instagram, but this happens to me a lot where my account gets completely impersonated. Somebody will copy my photos, all of my posts. They'll start following my followers. They'll DM them. They'll tell them, you know, like buy this from me. One of them was actually even trying to sell my own course to my followers, but with a scammy checkout link. So in this case, what I typically do is through Facebook Business Manager, I go and I report all of their content and their account as copyright infringements. And that usually gets it taken down within a day or so. And I also report them for impersonation through Instagram's form. But I'd love to know, like, from a legal standpoint, is there anything else that we can do? And also, if one of my followers were to get scammed through the link that they've received from this person imitating me, am I then responsible for that?
No, you're not responsible because somebody else has done that. So it's unfortunate, but you're not responsible for that. But you can take legal action against them. The problem is where they're located, you know, and typically they tend to be located overseas and it's harder to enforce and or take legal action against them other than using the platforms to help you. So it's still really a really tricky area in order to get satisfaction, shall we say, in making sure they don't do it to anyone else. So it's really hard to enforce. Even if you were to do something here in Australia, it's harder to enforce any kind of legal action over somebody who might not be where they seem to appear to be from as well, because of the way they operate. So it's really harder to enforce any kind of, say, legal judgment if you were to get one, and you were successful and get one. And plus it's a very costly exercise as well to achieve. So the things that you're already doing are great. I think that's fabulous. And just putting your customers on notice as well, around the potential of this happening, is important as well. And having that, and it's unfortunate you would even have to do that. But, you know, having that warning to your customers, to your members, to your audience, you know, every now and again, just a warning, there's a, you know, a copycat out there who's doing these things. It's definitely not me. If you see it, report it, let me know. And that's the most you can do in terms of protecting both your audience and yourself in that sense. And then also all the steps you've been taking as well, are the right steps to take. So, but in terms of further legal action, you need to find them first in order to do something about that. Really? And that's the tricky part.
Yeah. And it's not worth it, right? It's just, that would be a very costly exercise, very time consuming, not really a priority for somebody who's pretty.
Correct. And look, it's like I said, it's more about taking that proactive approach, which you're doing, and keeping your members and your audience notified every time you see an instance of it, just to flag it as part of your post as well, as a warning, and encourage them to let you know and encourage them to report as well. So it's not just you doing it. And that's a great way of being kind of proactive around those things. And then letting your clients and your consumers know, you know, this is the real you and you will only ever do these things, and not the things that they've been doing. So just having those things, those checks and balances in place is really good. One other thing I wanted to say actually before I forget, because you said about, you know, how do you protect your copyright? Another way I wanted to say something about ideas and protecting your ideas, because even though, you know, it's still, if you have an idea, business concept, and you want to discuss it with a potential business partner, collaboration, or something else, make sure you have an NDA in place, a non-disclosure agreement in place, before you discuss any confidential commercial conversations as well. Because, you know, I get it. You might have a genius idea that you find hard to keep to yourself, you know, but you never know who's lurking around the corner. So if you want to discuss that concept, that confidential information, for example, with an investor or a graphic designer or somebody, then a non-disclosure agreement before that next step of going into business with them is worthwhile having as well before you get to that next stage, because you may not get to that next stage with one investor. You might go with another one. So having that NDA in place is also an important way of protecting confidential commercial information that you want to discuss around your idea as well. Good. That's another way to protect. So there is a way to protect your ideas in that sense. Yeah.
Yeah, I love that. Now, you and I have both been through the process of coming up with names for podcasts, courses, business ideas, all of the different things. And it's so hard to come up with a name or a concept even that's not already been taken by somebody else. How, in the process of coming up with those names, how can we avoid accidentally copying someone?
Okay, that's kind of a tough one, but there are practical steps you can take. There's basically I call it due diligence. You do the work, you do the groundwork. So I would highly recommend you do Google search, you do your social media handle searching, because you're going to want to lock that puppy down if you find out nobody else has got it. So lock down, do search of domain names as well, and lock that down if it's available. Do a search of the IP Australia register, because that's where trademarks are registered. So do a search there as well. And one thing people do make a mistake when they're searching the IP register is using the exact spelling of the word. So do try variations. We recently had a matter where it was very unfortunate for our client, where she decided to register her own trademark, and she successfully registered it. But unfortunately for her, another brand with a very similar name already existed with a registered trademark and had done so for the last 15 plus years. So she had to rebrand her business, shut down her website and her socials until she rebranded. And that was the least of her costs. She also had other costs as well for the product she'd created with that particular label. So she had to relabel all of that. And that was a huge, hugely expensive exercise, because she put in the exact spelling rather than variations of, and the distinctive part was the name that she'd registered. So really, really important how you search the IP register. It's really important you do some variations on the spelling as well. Don't just assume necessarily that it's readily available. So do your different spelling checks, I guess, you know, add an extra L if it was a funny, like fine with 2D, you know. Mm-hmm. You do the extra checks as well, both across everything, but especially the IP Australia register. You should do that. And then hopefully you've done all of that due diligence. The name is available. You need to lock it down as a trademark. Because with Instagram, Facebook, it's kind of first come, first serve, really. You know, so with IP Australia is where you get first dibs, so to speak, the exclusivity, if you want to register and protect your name. So registering a company name, business name, you don't have exclusive rights to that. So if you want exclusive rights, you do need to register it as a trademark. And that's what's going to give you the exclusive rights. So if somebody then sets up an Instagram handle with your name, with a slight spelling variation, and is also offering the same products and services, you can get them shut down through Instagram and Facebook by presenting them with your trademark registration number. So super important to do the due diligence with the name and just be mindful of the variation in the spelling as well.
Really interesting, because I think there's a lot of, you know, misconception out there that if the Instagram handle and the domain name are free, then you're able to use it. And I think a lot of people skip the trademark step or this trademark search step. I mean, because my business operates overseas, I make sure I always search the WIPO one, one, and to make sure that it's, because even if it's free in Australia, I want to still be able to operate overseas without worrying.
Absolutely. And if you do have plans to be global and world domination, then you should be checking WIPO as well, WIPO. You should be checking their registers, and you should be checking for international trademarks, basically, to make sure, you know, that name is available and not already registered, because then you're going to have that horrible problem of one name in one country and a different name in other countries. I think a famous example of that is Burger King / Hungry Jack's. If there's a registered trademark already existing in, say, in the US, and you have the Australian version, you're not going to be able to register that name over in the US. You need to be really careful of doing that if you're planning world domination.
Yeah. I mean, that was such a funny one. When I first moved to Australia, I was like, what on earth is Hungry Jack's? Because even in New Zealand, we had Burger King. And then I realized, oh, it's a trademark issue. Okay. Same thing.
Yeah.
So
world domination, do all the searches.
Love it. And Riz, the final thing I want to talk about, which is kind of a new and exciting topic, and it's something everyone's talking about at the moment, and that is, you know, AI and ChatGPT. Who owns the copyright for something created by ChatGPT?
I'm going to be doing a blog on this. I've already done a blog and it's nearly done. But the answer is not very straightforward, unfortunately. An AI technically can't own intellectual property, at least not in Australia. However, that does not mean that you as the user own the content either. The concept of ownership, in this context, you know, refers to copyright interest or legal ownership. And as I was saying to you at the beginning earlier on, the legal landscape around AI generated content and copyright protection is basically a bit complex and is evolving. And generally copyright laws, you know, were designed to protect works created by human authors, right? And then comes along AI generated content. And so there is an ongoing debate about whether the user's input or direction is the creative contribution and therefore warrant copyright protection. But then, you know, in some cases, you could argue that the user's input's guiding the AI. You know, through providing the prompts or the instructions. So that's sufficient to establish copyright ownership. But that argument's not universally accepted. So it's kind of a up in the air answer at the moment. But I would say that if you're putting in all that content and it bounces out something a bit more tidied up, shall we say, I would say if you put in all the hard work, you probably own the copyright. But it's a more of a watch, this case, because until we get more clarity or consensus on the issue, it's best to check in on whether there is going to be copyright implications for AI generated content. Because it's just so complex. It's open to interpretation. So you just need to be mindful of what you generate using AI, versus what you generate, and then create, what wish to create and then own. So just be mindful of that if you want to own it. And I certainly wouldn't create a logo in AI and then try and trademark it. That's a whole different can of worms as well. So it's new technology. The legal landscape is still developing. So just be mindful of those things when you're using ChatGPT. Especially if you're somebody like a course creator and you get ChatGPT to create a whole course, it's like, well, is that even possible? Well, I believe it could be, but then yes. Who owns that content? And it's a hard one for me to say, yep, definitely you own it, or no, AI owns it. How does that work? It's like I said, in Australia, a human is expected to be the author of copyright.
I've seen a lot of Instagram ads actually on, for some piece of software that'll help you create your course with AI. And it's like, I mean, as a course creator, and you as well, like we both know that there is so much more that goes into creating it other than just assimilating all this knowledge from the internet and putting it into a course. Yeah. And I think that really, it defeats the whole purpose of what a course is. But I love what you were saying, you know, really just tread carefully with copyright, with ChatGPT. Maybe don't go and put your competitor's Instagram caption into ChatGPT and ask it to rewrite it. That probably isn't a smart idea.
No, I don't believe so. And look, you know, just be careful. You know, a lot of people are using it to, you know, get over a writer's block, you know, create some social content ideas for blogs or social content. Other people are using it quite ingeniously. You know, there's so many different types of AI out there where they're creating artwork as well. So just be careful, tread carefully around that content, especially if you're producing content that you wish to be paid for, you know? So yeah, just be careful of that. Also, you know, if you're using it to then give advice, say, who's responsible for that advice? Is it the AI or you? I think it's you, because you're putting it on your website, right? And you're claiming it to be yours. So just be careful about how, you know, I think it's wonderful. I think there's so many possibilities, and I'm open and willing and ready to learn all of those things, but just be careful how you use it and how you then use that content in a commercial sense with your consumers, with your audience, with your clients. You know, just be mindful around ownership questions, around any advice you're providing and the accuracy of that advice. I don't believe ChatGPT is known for its accuracy at the moment. Just be careful. There's a whole can of worms waiting for us there.
Ooh, wow. Watch the space. I'm actually really excited to see what develops in this space. It's scary. It's exciting. It's interesting. And yeah, I can't wait to see what happens.
Yeah.
Riz, I always ask my guests one final parting question, and I'm going to put you on the spot with this one. But when was the last time you took imperfect action in your business?
Oh, all the time. All the time. I'm like constantly, you know, we're about to launch a membership program, and I'm like, it's not perfect, but I don't care. I'm going to learn so much from launching it.
Yeah. You'll learn more from launching it than you would sitting around planning it, making it perfect, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Awesome. Riz, thank you so much for sharing all of your incredible legal knowledge with us today. We'll make sure to link to your copycat kit and your website in the show notes. Where else can our listeners connect with you if they want to learn more?
Well, they can definitely join me on Insta. I constantly live there. So it's at Find Legal. You know, go and visit my website, because there's lots of free content there. I'm also on LinkedIn if you want to, you know, join me there as well. But DM me, find me on Insta.
Amazing. Thank you so much, Riz.
You're welcome. Thank you.
All right. That is it for today's episode. If you have 30 seconds and you've learned something from this episode, please pop in a quick rating and a review for me in Apple Podcasts. It means a huge amount to me to be able to see that I have listeners. People are learning something from my episode. And it also makes a difference for somebody else who is considering listening to this show. So please, that is my one little ask for you as a return for this episode. Thank you so much for listening. Catch you next time.